Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Billboard on Broadway podcast. I am Rebecca Milzoff, your host, senior editor at Billboard, musical theater fan, and here every week to talk to you about the overlap between musical theater right now and pop music and pop culture. So I'm guessing that plenty of you out there are aware of the Hamilton mixtape, but in case you haven't heard it yet, it's this album of songs that was inspired by Hamilton. All of the songs on it are not straight recreations of songs from the show. Some are covers that are done in a slightly different style or with slightly different production. Some of them are total reimaginings of the songs, maybe based on a theme or an idea in the original. So I think it was this really inspired idea, not just because there were so many obvious hip-hop and pop references in the Hamilton score, but also because, number one, it invited artists from outside the theater world to come into it to show it's not a scary place. And in a way, it kind of said, look, these songs aren't sacred. They are continually relevant. They're worth re-listening to. They're worth reinterpreting. So that's also kind of the approach that one of Broadway's biggest recent stars, Billy Porter, takes on a new album that is just out. If you've seen Billy on stage, and if you haven't, I would say go to YouTube now, please. He's really nothing less than a force of nature as a performer. He is best known these days for having originated the role of Lola in Kinky Boots, for which he won a Tony Award, very deservingly. And more recently, last year, he was in the musical Shuffle Along. And I would say he loosely kind of takes a Hamilton mixtapean approach to classic Richard Rodgers songs on his new album, Billy Porter Presents the Soul of Richard Rodgers. It was just released by Sony Masterworks Broadway, and it already debuted at number 2 on the iTunes R&B chart and overall in the iTunes Top 40. Yay! The featured artists are basically like a who's who of current Broadway stars we all care about very much, from Hamilton's Chris Jackson, Renee Elise Goldsberry, and Leslie Odom Jr., to The Color Purple's Cynthia Erivo, to Porter's own co-stars in Shuffle Along, Joshua Henry and Brandon Victor Dixon, two of my faves. They are both, by the way, playing Aaron Burr in Hamilton now in different productions. And in addition, there are plenty of appearances from artists in the more pop-leaning R&B world, from singers who I think are kind of kindred spirits to Billy, like India Ari and Ledisi, Todrick Hall, who took over Billy's role in Kinky Boots recently. And of course, what would a party be without Pentatonix? Pentatonix is there as well. So Rodgers is, of course, probably best known as one half of the musical writing team, Rodgers and Hammerstein, and there are some songs on this album from their musicals written together, like South Pacific, Carousel, and The King and I. There are also these classic songs that I think anyone would know, regardless of your musical theater fandom, like My Funny Valentine and My Romance that he wrote. And they all get reinterpreted through this sort of neo-soul meets jazz, meets gospel, meets sometimes hip-hop and rap lens that I think really makes you hear the lyrics in a different way, for sure. And it made me realize just how timely so many of the subjects were that Rodgers, with and without Hammerstein, dealt with. Billy, of course, also sings on the album, and it's a fantastic showcase for how chameleonic I think his voice is, how emotionally direct it is. I mean, when he sings songs, you just can't help but pay attention. But he really acts as more of a curator here, kind of overseeing the tone and the structure and the sound of the project. So I was super psyched to speak to him recently about how he conceived the album, some of the guest stars he brought on, and just why we need to hear these songs in a new light right now. Thank you and welcome, Billy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So this album, there's a lot going on. It's really interesting. And I felt sort of like I was descending into Billy's urban hang suite, sort of.
Oh,
I was like,
so
I want to know why Maxwell is not involved.
First of all, because I don't know Maxwell, so I couldn't call him up.
Well, if Maxwell is listening, I should like call you up. I feel like you have very similar sensibilities. But tell me, so the idea of taking on an all Rodgers album to me is pretty ambitious. And, you know, this is anything but a canonical classic approach to his songs. So how did the idea first come to you? And was it always in this form, or did it sort of evolve into the way the album is now?
Well, it evolved. You know, my sort of patron of the arts, Susie Dietz and Lenny Beer, the people who have sort of been supporting me creatively and spiritually for the last few years. Susie ran a theater company in Los Angeles called Reprise, and they were doing a Richard Rodgers season. And one of the things that she wanted to do was a Richard Rodgers concert. And we had done a Stephen Sondheim show prior to this that was sort of the same kind of deconstruction of the material and sort of moving it forward sonically in, you know, a more contemporary way. And so she suggested that we do the same treatment with Richard Rodgers and do a concert. And so we did. And the focus of that concert was more about going, was more historical, you know, going from like jazz interpretations all the way up through, you know, gospel, R&B, hip hop versions of it. When Lenny, her husband, got a deal on Sony and came to me, and this idea was swirling around, I went back to the original source material, the original show, and what spoke to me was the latter half of the show and how those arrangements felt like something we had never heard before. Where the ones prior to, you know, the R&B and the soul and the gospel versions felt like we had heard them before. So I thought, well, the focus should be on the more contemporary versions. And that's how we sort of launched it.
Well, I was going to say that just speaking to how contemporary the album sounds, to me, the most classic treatment is maybe Deborah Cox.
Yes.
Which, is, I mean, sounds like a Whitney Houston song to me. So, I mean, the fact that that is the most classic interpretation says something about how modern the whole thing sounds.
Right. And even with that, you know, the Whitney Houston interpretation, which you got, the base of that, that's even further along than the way we had heard it in the past, I think. So yeah, we just wanted to create a new conversation with this music that's so classic and so brilliant, you know.
There are a lot of layers there that I had not heard before, which I will get to later. But so you are sort of acting as curator on this album, it seems, and you sing on some of the songs, but not on a lot of them, which I would think maybe as a performer is a difficult decision to make. No, not at all. So how did you decide, like, you know, I know when to come in and when not to?
Well, I've always been the kind of person who loves talent, and I've been surrounded by the greatest talent in the world all my life, like really all my life. And, you know, when I started owning the leader in me, it's always been about pulling my friends in and figuring out how we collectively can make a statement together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things that I think is missing from the market is what it used to be like in the golden age. You know, in the golden age of musical theater, the popular music came from theater. Mm-hmm. The popular music that was played on the radio came from the theater. At a certain point, that went away and theater became corny. Theater became something that was not, we in the theater weren't allowed to cross over, mm-hmm. no matter how fabulous we are, you know, and I lived it because, you know, I had a deal and, you know, when I had my first deal on A&M Records, I was 3 Broadway shows in and they wouldn't even let me talk about being on Broadway because it was a kiss of death. And so one of the things that I wanted to do with this album was show the world just how fierce we are over here. So that y'all can understand it. You know, and I think there have been benchmarks along the way. I think the greatest has been obviously Hamilton recently, mm-hmm. which has cracked open the conversation, I think, in this new millennium in a way that it hasn't been cracked open in a long time. And I'm riding the coattails of that. I want to extend that conversation beyond Hamilton into the rest of the industry, you know, because we're all here. We're here. And as you can see on this record, we're fierce.
And you've been here. And I mean, you make an excellent point. And really the purpose of this podcast in a big way is to say, like, yes, Hamilton has opened a door and has made a lot of people aware of musical theater in a way they weren't before. But musical theater was reflecting popular music long before Hamilton.
Yes. And I've been here for 30 years singing just like I've been singing on this record and beyond. So, you know, I'm excited about the reach that this can have, because I think also with Richard Rodgers, he still transcends, you know, generations. Mm-hmm. And even when you think you don't know a Richard Rodgers song, you know, the kids may think they don't know a Richard Rodgers song, but then you hear My Funny Valentine and it's like,
Bewitched. Oh, yeah. I had those moments too. I was
that?
Like, oh, I didn't know that. Yes.
You know, Doe a Deer from Sound of Music was the first song I learned in elementary school. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like everybody watches Sound of Music at Christmas time. So, you know, you're going to know Edelweiss.
Yes.
You know, the majority of the world is going to know Edelweiss. Mm-hmm. And I think with that, it's interesting to hear how we crack them open.
Completely. So when you have, I was going to say that, you know, it's tempting to make a comparison saying this is kind of Hamilton mixtapifying Rodgers, but
there's no way to talk about
it in this
world
without
making that comparison.
But it is very different, and yeah. You're taking on something that is canonical. Is it like, are you allowed to just sort of do your thing to Rodgers songs? Is there a process that has to happen? I don't know.
You know, my argument is always, as artists, we want to leave a legacy. And isn't the point that these songs that were written in the 30s, in the 40s, in the 50s, can now in 2017
be relevant?
Be relevant. Yeah, yeah. Like I'm certain that Richard Rodgers is happy about that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I'm certain. I don't know what the purists think and I don't care, but you know, I'm certain, speaking from an artist's point of view, mm-hmm. we want our legacy to live on. And isn't it amazing that, you know, this music can touch a whole different kind of person than it was ever first intended?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I
that excites me.
So I think that one of the things that's striking about the record is that even though different songs touch on different styles, like one sounds a little more gospel, one sounds a little more jazz inflected, there is a coherent sound to the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious who your sonic inspirations are, if there are pop artists who you always go to as inspiration, because I felt a little bit of like a Soulquarian kind of feel to a lot of it.
I grew up in the Pentecostal church, and for the first, you know, 11 or 12 years of my life, it was purely contemporary gospel, mm-hmm. in the 70s. And then I was introduced to theater. I got bit by the theater bug and I moved into doing theater, but the worlds didn't come together very often. Mm-hmm. You know, we had Jesus Christ Superstar, we had Dreamgirls, we had The Wiz, you know, but even with that, it, you know, contemporary sounds weren't at the forefront. And people were telling me when I would sing that I sounded like Donny Hathaway. And I didn't know who Donny Hathaway was. So I went on to, but you have to understand, this is like I'm 16 or 17. So yeah, I go in search of that. Mm-hmm. And I just fell down the rabbit hole of all the soul music and all of the R&B music. And so then my influences started to expand from gospel into those worlds. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I've been influenced by a lot of old school soul music, because I think the message in the music too, you know, music having something to say other than just how much money you're making or, you know, yeah. That always spoke to me. And voices, you know, singing voices. Mm-hmm. So I gravitate a lot to the voice. I also gravitate to the live energy of classic soul music. It's always been that.
It's a good energy.
Yes, it's a good energy. It is a good energy. And finally, someone has allowed me to do what's in my heart, as opposed to telling me what I should be doing, which the music industry tends to do very often.
Yes. So when you were conceiving the sound of, you know, these different arrangements, I'm just curious, were there any like records that are sort of touchstones for you, or anyone whose sound you just always tend to love that you were thinking maybe, you know, something along those lines would be nice? Or
yeah, I mean, I you know, I'll name some names. I always feel bad about that because I always forget people. But, you know, if you're speaking old school, it's like, you know, Donny Hathaway and Aretha Franklin and Gladys Knight and Al Green. And then you move forward into Music Soul Child and Angie Stone and Erykah Badu and, you know, that whole neo-soul movement.
Very much,
that has extended beyond the 70s. You know, it didn't stop. And it's still here, like you said earlier, Maxwell. It's like, these are the people whose sound...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I go back to over and over and over again.
And I think a lot of people are going back to them now, too. There's a real moment for
yeah,
for
I mean, I like pop music, you know, and Whitney Houston was the poppiest I ever got. And once again, that voice, you know, if you can't sing, I'm not interested. And I have a really, really high barometer of what singing, what good singing is, you know. And so, you know, while Whitney Houston was a bit more pop than is my way, she, I mean, come on.
It's Whitney.
She's the goddess of all things.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So speaking in the pop direction, there is a real presence from R&B and hip hop on the album. NDRE is on the album, Ledisi, and this
Ledisi.
Oh my God, I've mispronounced her name all these years. Sorry, Ledisi.
It's okay. Everybody does it.
I love her. And this rapper is Zaire Park,
yes,
who I had never heard of before. He's from the Bronx.
He's brand new. Yeah.
Representing for the Bronx.
Him.
Yes. So, tell me first about bringing India in for Carefully Talk, because that's one of my favorite tracks on the album. Let's listen to a little bit of it.
You've got to- to be taught to be afraid of people whose eyes are oddly made and people whose skin is a different shade. You've got to be carefully taught.
So tell me about how she came into things.
Well, India Arie is one of my absolute favorites. And I was doing Shuffle Along last year.
Yay, Shuffle Along.
Yay, Shuffle Along. And she came to the show. And during my blues number, there was a lone person standing up in the middle of the song.
Amazing.
The and I was like, who is standing up in the middle of this song? Turns out it was India Arie. So, you know, I make a beeline. We start chit-chatting. She talks about wanting to expand her reach and, you know, wanting to write a musical. And I'm a writer and I'm a director. And I was like, if there's anybody who can sort of bring that together
wow.
for her, because I understand how to translate what she does to the stage, mm-hmm. it would be me. So I was like, take my number, girl. We're going to do this together. And then, you know, we stayed in touch a little bit. And the album was not political. And this was around June.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't political. It was just an album. And then the election happened. And it got real political. You know? And I was supposed to have a couple of artists that kind of dropped out due to schedule. And it just popped into my head one day. And I was like, oh my God, Carefully Taught with India. And I called her and I thought, you know, I was calling her to do a solo.
Mm-hmm.
And she came into the studio and I was setting her up in the studio and I'm like, so how do you like to work? Do you like to do it, you know, straight through? Or do you like to do it phrase by phrase? Whatever you like, you know, you're welcome. We're here to accommodate you. She said, I thought I was singing a duet with you. Like,
like, surprise.
I mean, I can do it. I can sing a duet. I would love to sing a duet with you, but you know, I just wanted to honor these people. I didn't want to impose myself on these amazing artists that I was bringing in who you know, agreed to sort of lend their stuff to us. Mm. You know, I wanted to respect that and I didn't want to impose myself on, you know, so she wanted to do a duet, and that's literally how it happened, in the room, in the space. And she started with that background vocal, do you mm-hmm. have the courage to love somebody? And you know, that was my fear with the song, because in the context of the show, there's context to understand that what they're saying is, this is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I was struggling with context. I was struggling with trying to figure out, how do we create the context within the song so that people understand that we're saying, this is bad.
Yes.
You know, and she started with that hook and the tears streamed down my face and I got engaged and that phrase is in my ring with my husband. Do you have the courage to love somebody? Because that's what it is now. You know, mm-hmm. it's an act of resistance. You know, it's an act of courage to love people these days, it seems.
Yes.
You know, so that's how it came about.
And it's very profound. And I think it's actually, it doesn't feel like overtly trying to make a statement. And I think because it's just such a, the spirit of the song is so strong. And just that backing vocal alone, just kind of, I mean, she's a quietly powerful singer, I think, to begin with.
And shivers.
Yeah, total shivers. And then Zaire, who raps on two tracks.
Yes.
Tell me about discovering him.
I went to love Beauty and the Beast. No, Beauty and the Dragon. A dinner at the West Wing and we can have it. Friends, you didn't call it magic, but haters might call it tragic. Fortunately for you, there's no detoxing from this habit. Girl, I'm trying to get your attention, but yeah, with no influence. Lean you over the city to fill a top view. Let me take over addiction and be the substitute.
So, my writing partner and I, James Sampleener, who've been working together for about 14 years now, you know, we were the ones that had the initial show in Los Angeles. And as we were putting this together, one of the things that I realized, I think one of the things of being a leader, a good leader, is understanding what you do, but more importantly, understanding what you don't do. Mm-hmm. And I knew that between the two of us, we could get the sound to a certain level, but we needed the ringer. And I was walking down the street trying to figure out this ringer. And Michael Sandlofer popped into my head. And I've known him since the mid-90s when we were both starting out in the music industry. And, you know, he's a hip-hop, R&B, soul producer who's worked with everybody. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't spoken to him in like a decade. And I went in my phone.
I was going to say, how many of these people do you just have on speed dial?
I went into my phone and there was a number and I just pressed it and prayed and he picked up the phone. And it was like, thank you, Jesus. And, you know, we lost a couple of our rappers, mm-hmm, because of schedules, you know, just, you know, people being superstars. But I really wanted to have that energy on the record. I really, mm-hmm, wanted to have, you know, a hip hop rap energy on the record. And Lofi, Michael Sandlofer, we call him Lofi for short. Mm-hmm. He has a production company and this artist is signed to his production company. He said, okay, I got this guy, you know, he's really, really amazing. I would love for you to hear him. And he came and wrote that stuff and
it worked out well.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when we talk about, we have to give some love to the Broadway people, which is basically like Hamilton stars past and present. It feels like two amazing duets, Renee Elise Goldsberry and Chris Jackson, yes, and then Brandon Victor Dixon. Who knows? He is my Broadway husband. I have told him that I think he is the last member of Boyz II Men, first of all. And he and Josh Henry, with, yes, whom he sings, I think that they should just take it on the road.
I did shuffle along with.
Yes. Yeah. I just like the two of them should just be an act. I love when they do like the backstage Jodeci covers. It's like one of my favorite things ever. Anyway.
I was privy to that.
So tell me about making those two really magical pairings of people.
Well, you know, the Renee Goldsberry and Chris Jackson duet.
If I loved you, words wouldn't come in an easy way. Round in circles, I'd go.
First of all, Renee and I are like best friends from college. So I've known her for a very long time. Nice. And, you know, that was a throwback to, you know, Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell.
Yes.
You know, Donny Hathaway, Roberta Flack, Kindred, The Family Soul. I wanted one of those sort of just quintessential love duets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we've gotten away from love and move so far into just sexual animalistic desire, mm-hmm, that I wanted to go back a little bit to a simpler time, a more loving time, dare I say.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how that came about. I was in the show with the boys, you know, I was in Shuffle Along with the,
yes,
boys, and I knew I wanted to hear their voices together.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the influences was Agony.
Oh,
from,
nice,
Into the Woods.
I appreciate an Agony reference.
It was sort of like the two princes vying for the princess's love by one-upping each other vocally.
Yes, which is a little what they did in Shuffle Along too.
Which is so I wanted to sort of have fun and make it playful and play with that. So that's how that duet came about.
That a song such as ours came to be, but I always knew
I enjoy that very much. you know, we touched a little bit about the political in these songs, and I have to say that this really made me realize in a way that maybe I hadn't cohered in my head before how much Rodgers dealt with the idea of love people who are different from you in his work. I mean, in
all of it,
in all of it, but prominently in South Pacific and in The King and I. And, you know, it's incredible just how relevant that still is today and how these you hear these songs in just a very different way right now.
Yeah, because, you know, I think one of the things that we forget, you know, growing up way after these pieces were written initially, you know, the first time I came in contact with the Rodgers and at Rodgers and Hammerstein show was in high school, where it's watered down, the politics are all taken out of it, and you don't even realize that that's what it's about. You know, the first time I realized what Carousel was about was when they did the revival with Audra McDonald. And I was like, oh, this is about domestic abuse. And she stays with him. You know, like, they were tackling really huge issues. It's like the woman that you fall in love with, the little blonde woman you fall in love with in South Pacific, is a racist. She turns around to be a racist. You know, they were dealing with huge things. And I just wanted to make that clear. It's like, even with Edelweiss, you know.
That was my next question.
It's like Edelweiss, the Von Trapp family was singing Edelweiss as they were trying to escape from the Nazis. Let's be clear. You know, there was there. Let's be clear. That's what they're doing in that musical in the context of the show. So releasing it on the day of the inauguration was on purpose.
Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, Edelweiss in particular has, I feel like it's become a song for you.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like this is going to be like a trademark for you.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
and you do it on the album in a very unique way. How did you, there's some spoken word in it, then you kind of launch into the singing of it. So how did, I mean, how did that come together?
That's the full on gospel kid in me. The full on, you know, contemporary gospel, whether it's Kirk Franklin, whether it's Jay Moss, whether it's Kiki Sheard, the Clark sisters, Donald Lawrence, Kurt Carr, you know, it's all of that. And that's my moment to do that. And you know, Mary, you know, just really, but really urban contemporary gospel, you know, that has, that is the root. I think it's interesting because, you know, R&B and soul music borrows from gospel, and then gospel borrows from R&B, and then R&B borrows from gospel again. And it just has been that way for years and years and years. And so that's literally how that came together.
And I was getting a very Kirk energy actually from you. I'm glad.
No, it's completely and fully that.
Well, I think that this, I mean, to me, this is a, such a great illustration of what great musicals do, which is, you know, in the vehicle of something involving people singing and dancing, there is actually, the best musicals have a much more serious message, that's a genuine message and not like banging you over the head with the message going on. Well, it's been great talking to you. I think we'll go out to a bit of Edelweiss. It's so great to talk to you, Billy, and good
luck
for the album.
Thank you for having me. Yay.
Blossom of snow, may you bloom and grow.
Again, I would really encourage all of you to go check out Billy's new album. Again, it's called Billy Porter Presents the Soul of Richard Rodgers. It's really fantastic, and the song will remain a secret, but all I will say is that after we did the interview, Billy gave me an a cappella serenade of a big song from a Stephen Sondheim musical, and I can still remember how I felt on the floor afterwards when I melted. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Billboard on Broadway podcast. If you like us, please go to iTunes and give me some nice stars, some nice reviews. You can always find me on Twitter at Rebecca Millsoff. Use the hashtag Billboard on Broadway if you're ever referring to us. And I hope you'll come back next week. Blah, 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 blah.